Welcome to Parc Fermé, the Canadian Formula One podcast.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Parc Fermé, the Canadian Formula One podcast. I am here with the boys, Drew, Thomas. My name is Walker. Ed is missing in action this week, but we've got some great stuff to chat about today because we finally have a real race to discuss. No more testing, no more practice, no more rumors. We got to see the real thing this past weekend, and I'd love to hear some first reactions. Thomas, what did you think of the race?
You know what? Me and Drew were talking about this before the podcast, and to me personally, it was a disappointing race. I mean, I think we all expected the outcome that what we got, Max dominating again. Not much to say. It was kind of disappointing. Not much action. hoping the other races are going to be more interesting, honestly. That's what I have, Drew.
You know what? Like, I share the sentiment in terms of, like, was it the most exciting race ever? No, it wasn't. Was it nice to have Formula One again and, like, you know, listen to Crofty and Brundle ripping it up? 100% it was. You know, let's take it from there and go to, like, you know, yeah, was Max dominating? Sure. Was he 4 seconds ahead by, like, the end of the first lap? Yeah. Did he have, like, a free pit stop, you know, by the 31st lap? 100% he did. You know, so, like, I guess, you know, par for the course. Nothing really changed from the end of last year to the beginning of this year. I guess it was a little bit of disappointment in terms of, like, what I saw out of Mercedes, what I saw out of McLaren, what I saw out of Aston Martin, and even Ferrari. You know, they had some brake issues with Leclerc. Mercedes, you know, they had a broken seat. We fucking talk about that. Like, who breaks a seat? Like, are we trying to save weight so much that your carbon's so little that you're breaking seats now? So, you know, the best of the rest was they weren't dialed in like they needed to be, especially to kind of, like, you know, give Red Bull the fight that they need in order to kind of, like, make things interesting again. You know, we're going to touch on a bunch of those, you know, little microcosms that I talked about right there. But, like, as a whole, yeah, it was an okay race. I'm glad it's back, but, you know, it's nothing that I'll remember.
I think it's one of, I'm not sure, my experience with it is, you know, you're looking forward to it so much. You're building up this anticipation and you're praying that things are going to be a little bit different this year, right? You're just like, okay, like, things are going to happen. Like, you know, Red Bull, yeah, they're going to have an early lead, but there'll be some fighting. There's going to be some competition. And then you see the first race, which could have just basically been like the 25th race of, like, 2023 or whatever number of race it was, right? It could have just been a continuation of last year, as far as I'm concerned. I think one of the surprising things to me about this race was how mediocre everyone else looked. You touched on it, you know, like McLaren and Ferrari and Mercedes. You would have thought that there would have been maybe, like, a clear second place team that was maybe challenging Red Bull a little bit more. And let's just be clear, when we say Red Bull, we're mainly talking about Max, because, again, like, there was a big pace differential between Max and Checo again. But, you know, I thought there would have been a more clear number two, but it felt to me that, you know, anything beyond Max and Red Bull was there. It almost felt like they were fighting for, like, you know, third and fourth position on the grid in terms of, like, where that team stacks up right now. I don't see, like, a clear contender to Red Bull. And I think that was maybe the most disappointing part of it, that there was no contender, let alone one. So it'll be interesting to see how a Ferrari or a Mercedes or a McLaren kind of, you know, spread that mid-pack out and see who can really kind of claim that number two spot and maybe compete. You know, all the teams are talking, they have a ton of potential left. They have, you know, it's still tweaking. They're still, like, learning the cars. They're still, like, making changes here and there. But I just don't see it. And I think probably one of the most exciting parts of the race actually happened when the race was over. You touched on it, Drew, with Yuki and Daniel. I think, you know, the most exciting part was just something that happened on the cool down lap, which is, I don't know, funny, sad. I can't really decide which. But
I think it's both. I think you nailed it. It's funny and sad.
What else happened during the race? There was a little, there's still some Ferrari on Ferrari heat. You know, Charles couldn't get like a decent car. His car was breaking down again. Mercedes was mediocre, and yeah, it was lots of room for improvement. I would say that much. So the good news is we don't have to wait long for our next race. It's coming up in a few days now. We'll talk about that later. I do want to touch on the most exciting part of that race, and that is the Yuki Ricciardo incident. What was your takeaway from that?
You know what? I think for me, like over the one lap pace, like, okay, so let's start over. I'll break this down. Like Danny Ricciardo has wins behind him. He has a winning mentality. He knows what it's like and feels like and what it takes to be a winner. And I think Yuki has a ton of potential. Like I quite like Yuki. He's a little scrappy bugger. He's a big mouth on the mic and you know, he drives pretty well. Like I got no problems with Yuki and he was not happy about getting the team orders in order to swap cars. Like, you know, when whatever lap that was, cause you know, in his defense, like I think he deserved a shot at the back of K-Mag because you know, he had earned that. And I know Danny Rick had you know, taken a different strategy and jumped on the soft tires. And so they obviously let Danny Rick pass cause they thought he was going to, you know, take the fight to K-Mag. But I honestly think that like Yuki had a better shot. And like, the more I watch that, the more I realize that like Yuki would have been there before Ricciardo. And because they did the whole swap and it was a little bit messy, you know, that to me was just, you know, team orders are team orders. I get it. And like, it made sense logistically on paper, but the reality was, is that Yuki was in the zone and they took that away from him, the poor little bugger. But you know, you can just see the animosity between the two and they're fighting for their drive next year, right? Because there's a lot of young guns sitting in F2 that deserve seats. And you know, obviously Red Bull doesn't really care. And both of those guys need to shine and prove that they're the better RB driver. And so, I think that that's going to be very interesting to see it unfold throughout the race calendar this year. But ultimately, like, I don't know. Like if you look at pace just on its own, Yuki's faster, like in terms of the race pace, one lap speed. I think Danny Rick has that nailed. I think he has the confidence to go into qualies a little bit hotter, but I think that, you know, over the course of an entire race, Yuki's got him dialed in a little bit. And I don't think that's what Danny Rick wants to hear, but I think it's the truth. What do you got on that one, Thomas?
Not too much to add. As much as I like, Danny Rick, I don't have any bad feelings towards Yuki or anything. I still think he's a good driver too, but in my eyes, in my opinion, I think that was a mistake swapping them. I thought so too, that Yuki was performing way better. He had the pace. It just seemed like he was doing better that race than Danny Rick. And to my surprise as well, when they made that move, I was a little bit confused why. And especially when that swap happened, Yuki was pushing Danny Rick, was essentially saying, come on, buddy, like let's go a little bit faster. What are you doing? And like you said, on paper, made sense. In real life, didn't really make sense. Yuki at the same time could have been a little bit more mature. And the way he acted, called out over team radio, he's like, oh, you know, whatever he said, it just is like, come on, dude, like you're an F1 driver. Like, it's not a big deal per se. So just the way he reacted, sometimes I don't like his reactions like that, but I agree. They're both trying to show what they're capable of. They're fighting for the next seat, for who's a better driver. But in regards to this whole situation, that swap shouldn't have happened. Yuki should have had the chance, and he should have been, they should have stayed with the way things were. That's in my opinion.
And just a reminder, like they were battling over 12th place. You know what I mean? Like these aren't point positions. You know what I mean? Like this was a nothing burger, but like they really wanted to apparently, you know, it's not a battle to win points at this point. It's a battle between the two of them.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Was Daniel on soft tires and Yuki was on medium, or he was on fresher tires or something like that, where he was supposed to have a bit of an advantage?
Yeah. So Danny was on, Danny was on softs and Yuki was on old hards.
Yeah. Okay. That's what it was. So, you know, theoretically, he would have a bit of a performance differential just based on the tires, right? And I think, you know, to your point, you would have someone like Yuki. Obviously, no one in that position, no one likes being told they have to swap, right? No one at that level wants to swap, right? It's one thing to be pissed off. It's one thing to like curse on the radio and like talk shit to your engineer and get all pissy and all that stuff. I think it's a completely different thing to like dive bomb your teammate on the cooldown lap and fucking lose your shit and like almost take out two cars, right? And I think, you know, we all have an affinity for him. He's like a funny little guy. He's got like lots of spunk. He's got like, you know, some promise as well. Like I'm a fan of him overall, but I think, you know, shit like that's going to lose you your seat when you're kind of endangering the whole team, both from like a monetary standpoint. Just like, can you imagine if they crashed because he fucking went into the side of Daniel and just like totaled two cars?
Oh, and cost him like, you know, $500,000?
At least, yeah.
At least, yeah.
You know, and it kept, so you're listening to the commentary during the race. We're talking about like, you know, and even the comments that you see on like some of the social media posts after this incident happened, and everyone's defending Daniel. And he's like, hey, he's an 8-time winner, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. And it really got me thinking. We, you know, again, we all like Daniel Ric because he's got a great personality. He's great to watch. He's fun. But I'm like, 8 wins in your entire career, which I looked it up. His first one came in 2014. So 8 wins over 10 years. Like, that's not a stellar record. Like, I think he maybe got off to like a decent start, right? But the way people like tout him and the way people put him on a bit of a pedestal, given his track record, I think is somewhat mediocre when you have someone like, we're going to take Thomas's boy, Valtteri, here. He has 10 wins, but no one talks about him the same way that they talk about Daniel, right? Because he doesn't have that same kind of star quality, whatever you want to say. So, you know, maybe that's a separate discussion, but I think, you know, and I think, who was it, Villeneuve, that came up with a comment, but also got me thinking about this, saying that basically Daniel's just there because he's like a marketable asset.
100%. Right? Yeah, we've discussed that ad nauseum.
100%, but it's just, you know, really looking at the numbers, and it's like, it's been a fairly mediocre career at this point.
Okay, well, let's push back on this, because I think that's a great point.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. Yeah.
Right, because Nico Hülkenberg.
Yep.
You know what I mean? True. So, like, and obviously he was in a car at the time that, you know, should have been winning probably more than 8 races a year, but then his teammate at the time was also winning races, right? So, I'm with you. I get it. And like, you're not wrong, dude. 100%. Like, I agree that like, are we, you know, putting Danny Ric on this pedestal that like, it maybe isn't deservedly so. Yeah, I think, you know, but we love him, you know, that he has this charisma and this like, je ne sais quoi about him that like, we all just love and we want to see him on the grid. But like, does Yuki, I think, have more long-term potential? For sure. Like, do I think right now, like, they're at the same point in time, Danny on his way down and Yuki on his way up? Like, I think they're at the same point, but Yuki has a future. And he's got that Japanese money, buddy.
All comes down to the money.
That's it. Let's get real.
All comes down to the money. Yeah. No, basically, yeah. What you said, Drew, like, I think they're roughly about the same point. I wouldn't say Danny Ric is going lower per se. I still think, or at least I hope, we're going to see more of him winning races or at least being on the podium. But looking long-term, yeah, Yuki is probably has a brighter, better future in Formula One and moving on. Daniel, as we all discussed, marketable asset, just money at this point, I'd say. So he, I think we talked about this last season on Parc Fermé, that if he wants to have more of a future, he has to perform, and because he's basically almost on the shittiest team right now, so he has to show that he's capable of winning. Yeah.
You know what? To your point, Drew, I think part of reframing what it means to be successful in Formula One is also part of it, right? Because, you know, I look at this, I'm like, 8 wins in 10 years, because we're used to talking about like the Lewises and the Maxes and the Vettels and all that stuff, right? And I'm looking through this list right now, and it's like, you know, maybe 8 is a pretty damn good career total, right? Like, I'm looking at like Leclerc, for example. You know, everyone thinks he's going to be like a world champion, like all this stuff. Like, he's got 5 wins in his career. Exactly. And mind you, he's had a shorter career than Daniel, but still, it's not like breaking any records anytime soon.
Correct. That's what I'm saying. Like, any win that you get in Formula One is something to be like proud of, even if it's a dumb luck win. Like, you know, to have something like that on your resume is really nice. And I think, you know, Danny Ric has that, the staying power because of his personality. So yeah, whatever. Good for him. I hope he sticks around. He's fun to watch.
I mean, frankly, from like an entertainment standpoint, if Danny and Yuki want to go at this all season long,
yeah,
I'm 100% here for it.
Yeah, I get behind it for sure in a big way.
Yeah, not.
Yeah,
it's gonna be the only interesting thing about the season.
Correct.
Based on race number one, let's touch on. Let's go to Bottas for a second. We mentioned he has 10 wins. And he also has, I think, two of the records for the longest pit stops ever.
Yeah.
I mean, the first one is never going to be broken because I think that, what was it, like a 36-hour pit stop before they get that wheel off?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
something like that.
Yeah.
But still, 52 seconds. He was doing okay, but, you know, a bit of a rough race. And then you have the Alpines just... completely. I mean, they did what we expected them to do, but
it's true. We had no hope for them, like based on the preseason testing and like watching qualies and FP1 and Eddie's favorite FP2. You know, like they really weren't anything to talk about. And like the most interesting part about Alpine has nothing to do with their cars.
No, not at all. And I, you know, we just heard recently that they, Drew, you mentioned this. You have the names, or at least the roles. They let go a couple of senior technical people recently.
Yeah, there's a couple of people that they let go in between the last race and now, and it's a couple on their technical side. Hold on, let me get their names here. Hold on, we got who do we get? Oh, Harmon and De Beer. So like it was both on their tech side, and like they've already had enough of the, because we still have Otmar. He's still the team principal right now. But they had like CEO switch, like just the internals in, you know, the behind the scenes in Alpine, there's no stability. And so like, how can you expect anything in terms of performance to come out when the stability is virtually zero at this point, right? So like, ultimately, I think that, you know, Alpine needs to figure out, and like, even from my experience, like hiring and firing people is great on a short term, like micro or macro, but like, you need to understand that like, to have a better car in a couple years, you really need to gel as a team. And like any sport is like that, you know what I mean? Like you watch you know, the Lakers hire all of the best basketball players in the world, and like they don't go win a championship the first year. They might second, third year, but like it takes time for that team to like get together and really figure out how each other work and use it to their advantage. And every season, you know, something happens at Alpine. They expected the world to change, and you know, then they get rid of some people and it starts all over again. And so I don't think that they've slowed down enough to solidify anything solid in upper management, middle management, on the tech side, on the driver communication and relations. And now, like I said, the most solid thing about that team is the two drivers. And like, I'm going to be honest, those two boys are frustrated in a big way. And like both of those guys deserve a car better than Alpine's. And I think of any team in the best of the rest category, I think both of those drivers, you know, aside from Alex Albon, are the most deserving of a good car.
it's such a clusterfuck. It's such a shit show at Alpine, what's going on. It's been like that last year as well, this year. And I don't know what it is, but they just can't get it together. And like what Drew mentioned, the two people that suffered the most are the drivers. They're stuck in a shitty car, shitty management, shitty support, or, you know, for the most part anyways, and they have nothing to show for it. They can't show their skills. They can't prove their skills. And I don't know what Alpine needs to do to bring some stability to that team, because there's essentially none, and they're almost becoming a laughing stock, as bad as Haas at this point. If the things continue going this way, it's going to be like Haas 2.0. I don't know. It's funny to watch from entertainment side of view, but it's disappointing to see them race like that.
I think back to Walker's point too, like, you know, you brought it up last week, like, these are manufacturer car, like a team, like this is, this should not be happening. And like, you know, then you see somebody like Cadillac Andretti, who's like doing anything they can in the world to get onto the grid. And these guys have that opportunity and they're just, they're blowing it in a big way. So yeah, I just think it's a waste.
Speaking of pathetic, going back to Bottas for a second. So Bottas has a 52-second pit stop, and he still finishes a lap up on Logan Sargeant.
That's a fun fact. I actually didn't realize that till right now.
I was just looking at the standings.
But I was talking with my brother today, and he said, hey, what'd you think of the race? And he's like, what do you think was the most standout part of the race? And I said, Logan Sargeant surprised me the most. He did not crash, and he finished the race. Like, that deserves some version of a Canadian applause. Like, you get some love. You get some love from your younger brother up north, buddy. Like, yeah, celebrate small victories, dude. Baby steps.
He just finished. And you know what, Frank? I don't think any of our predictions came true. Like, who's going to crash first? Mechanical failure. Like,
nobody was.
Everybody finished.
Yeah.
All 20 cars crossed the line eventually. But, yeah, I thought that was pretty funny.
In terms of predictions, I picked the wrong Ferrari for third place.
I had
Max Checo Leclerc. It does, yeah,
that
no, for sure.
It doesn't count, Drew.
Yeah, there's no close.
You'll get like half points. There's no half points in this game. Let's move on to, there were a couple of rule changes as well. Do we want to touch on the DRS a little bit?
Of course we do. What a, I didn't even know this until the first lap of the race. And then Martin Brundle and Crofty, yeah, they jumped on and they're like, oh yeah, by the way, I'm like, this is a big deal. Like, having that DRS, because I think what they're trying to do, at least from my opinion, I don't know if they dove into it a little bit, I can't remember, but they're trying to stop Max from getting so far away so quickly. Because like, if he's out of that 1 second barrier by the second lap, then like, they had no chance. This is when you get those 28 second, 30 second, whatever runaways. And I think from my understanding, at least, that they're also doing it after safety cars for that same reason, because Max would just get away so quickly that, that there was no chance for anyone else to catch up. And I don't remember it specifically, but I don't think George, after the first lap when he passed Leclerc for second, I don't think either one of them got into DRS zone ever again.
No, Max was gone.
Yeah, he was gone.
Yeah, I was gone. With the DRS thing, I don't know if you guys noticed it. It seemed a little bit more closer together, the pack. Like, Max didn't disappear into the future by like 30 seconds from the rest of the pack. It seemed a little bit more closer fighting. That's at least what I saw. Did you guys notice that or not really?
I think I saw, like, from the most part, like, you know, the mid pack, what we would call the DRS train, I think those were a little bit more prominent. And like, at least for the first 10 laps, a lot of the guys were bunched together a little bit. After they got off the softs, I think around like the 14 to 17 lap mark, when they were all starting to get off the softs and onto the hards, you saw a little bit more of the staggering of what was going on in the race. And I think that just had to do with strategy at that point and what the tire deck looked like in terms of like that track, because it's a heavy tire deck track. But ultimately, like, what I did notice is that the DRS for Red Bull was not the same power that they had last year. Because like, that looked like they were playing in a whole other league. Like, they had some cheat code when that DRS went down for them. But watching Checo try to battle with, you know, Carlos trying to battle with Leclerc and try to battle with George, it looked like a fight even when he had DRS, which I really like. And so hopefully that bunches the pack together. I don't know. That's just my two cents on it.
So we're going into, where are we going next week? Abu Dhabi? No, Saudi Arabia. Excuse me. Yeah, Saudi Arabia next week. What are we looking forward to? Were there any glimmers of hope last week that make you think we're going to see anything different this week? Drew, anything?
Anything
we can latch on to?
It's a different track. It's a completely different course. I think that, you know, there's an opportunity for some of the, you know, the immediate best of the rest. So your Mercedes, your McLaren, your Aston Martin, and your Ferraris, like those other four teams, I think from my understanding and what I've read and heard around the paddock, because that's where I hang out, that they had a little bit of power left in them. There was, I guess, some issues with them detuning the engine and not picking the right mode. And I think that also affected Williams and Aston Martin because they're also running the Merc engines. So Mercedes has a little bit more of the like tweaking to do in order to come up. And I was also under the understanding that Ferrari, once they figure out their brake issues, because, you know, we haven't touched on this yet, but like Charles Leclerc was locking up in every single corner. Like he was just mm-hmm. like, and there was a whole, I guess, brake duct heating issue that he had. And so every time that he had to press those brakes that his front right would lock up. And like, that's a big problem, like an intrinsic problem. So I think if all those guys fix those little things and, you know, kind of push their car and learn a lot from that first race, I'm praying that we have a better race this weekend. And I'm excited that it happened real quick, because waiting another couple of weeks for this show would be for the birds.
I don't think it's going to be a much different race from what we just had.
You're probably right.
I think Max again is going to dominate. Checo is probably going to be second, and Ferrari is going to be third and fourth. If by miracle some other order comes up, then it's an interesting race in my book. I'm not expecting too much. I'm still hoping for that miracle, you know, Max Verstappen, Red Bull power unit breakdown or something like that, but that's definitely not going to happen. So no, I don't think it's going to be a better race this weekend coming up.
So I think, Drew, to your point, I think the one thing that is leaving me some hope was the amount of technical issues that we saw the other teams have, whether it's Merc's engines, overheating, Ferrari with their brakes. I think there hopefully leaves a lot of room for improvement, where if they can kind of figure that stuff out for this week, maybe we can be a little bit more competitive. Maybe we can, you know, run the engines at a higher setting. Maybe Leclerc can brake, you know, and get around a corner without going off the track, because that would help his lap times for sure. Big time. And all these little things will kind of hopefully start to bring us towards a more competitive series, where there is a legitimate chance of someone else winning the race on merit instead of just on like dumb luck or some, I don't know, a drain cover hitting Max's car. I don't know. Something.
You know,
act of God.
Thomas and I were talking a little bit before you got in here, Walker, and we were just discussing, like, at what point do some of the new and newer fans to F1 stop watching? Because, yeah. Like, if I started watching this, like, you know, after Abu Dhabi 2021, this would be, like, not a fun sport to watch. Like, mm-hmm. There's nothing, like, I guess in terms of entertainment value, like, if you don't follow it like we do, and we don't like they subscribe to the F1 newsletters and get all the stuff in the behind the scenes and all that stuff, and you're just tuning in on a Sunday to watch a race, not cool. Like, it's just whatever. Like, I would bounce from this sport. I would have bounced probably last year, to be honest.
You're right. So I guess what happens in that case? Because there's the sporting, you know, we've talked about this at length last year, right? There's a sporting element of Formula One, and then there's the massive entertainment aspect, right? And you see this with all sport, you know, whether it's NFL, NHL, like they all try and like tweak the rules to make the games more exciting, to get more fans in. What needs to happen for Liberty Media and, you know, the FIA to come in to make it more competitive? And is that maybe what they're trying to do with the new regulations in 2026? You know, that's something we have to wait a couple of years for, because
I think everyone's banking on that, man. I think you nailed it. Because
the development cycle is so long. Like, you can't just change shit next year in terms of regulations. You can't just, you know, maybe you can change the layout, maybe you can change the DRS zones. You can play with that kind of stuff, but not necessarily development. Are we just all on hold for another 2 years?
Yeah, I think so. Like, I really? Think that's the reality. So sad. Because it is. But like, you know, Red Bull was so far ahead on these new regs that by the time everyone else catches up, they're also still developing, right? So like, mm-hmm. You're always playing behind the eight ball, and unless somebody found some secret sauce somewhere that, like, you know, Adrian Newey left behind on like a, you know, a food tray somewhere in the paddock, like nobody's gonna know how to catch up to them. And like, you know, I'll give it up to Mercedes, because they got rid of the side pods. They did that no pod design, and they had to fully redesign it. And I think if they went with this design from the start, they'd probably be in a lot better position. But the reality is they're not. And so I think that like there's just no chance that I think by 2026 that anyone's going to catch up, because you have the law of diminishing returns. Like at one point, Red Bull will stop being able to advance further and everyone will catch up. But by that point, 2026 is going to happen. And from what I heard, that I think the Red Bull, this like new eco fuel engine that they got going on, not so bueno.
No. No, that's why they're having trouble with that. Yeah. Ford is having a bit of an issue developing that engine, which is actually a great segue, because what does Max do when all of a sudden he's presented with a shit car? He's driven, you know, arguably the most dominant car in the sport for the last two seasons now. He has this season and maybe next season. But what happens when he gets a subpar car again?
He's going to jump ship.
Does he go have lunch with Toto and explore his options? I just heard about this from you guys today. I did not know about this.
Jos Verstappen was in the paddock and had a very public, lengthy conversation with Toto Wolff. And that's not something that normally happens. They're not boys. They don't have little chit-chats and sing-songs. You know, a little tea and a toupee. They don't have that. So, you know what I mean? So they are either Jos is doing this strategically to renegotiate Max's contract or kind of like get Red Bull to pull up their socks, or there's a legitimate thought process like, hey, listen, like, you know, before this ship starts sinking, let's get off the boat and jump in, you know, into Mercedes while there's a seat opening, because they haven't committed to anyone else yet. And so like they know 100% that Lewis is going to Ferrari. And so they're like, listen, we got a seat and it's ours if we want it. Let's figure this out. I don't think it's a terrible play. I don't, because, you know, Mercedes has that pedigree to win. And if they're further along in the 2026 engine developments for the sustainable fuels, then why not get on board? You might have one season where you're out of pace with Mercedes, but I think by the time you gel and the amount of attention that will get, I think Toto can do a good job and pull that together. Now, poor George, on the other hand, he would hate his life. Hate his life. But welcome to the big leagues, baby.
So I think why Max's dad had a conversation with Toto as well, I have a feeling just because of the publicity that's going on Red Bull, they might want to distance themselves and not be associated or have anything to do with internal management. And I think, same to your point, Drew, I think they're looking ahead and maybe they're getting their cards, collecting the right cards for the play ahead, just to kind of distance themselves from that team, from that negative publicity, just in case shit goes downhill. So it's also a win-win, you know, like you jump ship, you might jump ship to a better car as well. And maybe win more championships. That's what I think. That's when I first heard of the whole meeting. That's the first thought process that I had.
So follow up question, Thomas, and we can touch on Christian Horner in a second. Do you think the main motivation for someone like Max to leave is because he doesn't want the bad PR, or because he doesn't want Christian to leave the team to go to shit and him to have a shit car, shit management
for 8 years,
shit organization?
Yeah. yeah.
I don't know if it's so much the PR. I don't think he's worried about like image as much as he's worried about like, if this goes to shit, then, you know, I don't want to be part of this sinking ship as they're trying to restructure, bring in new management. Because right now, you know, he's got it pretty good there. He's got a true ecosystem that he thrives in.
True, I agree. But correct me if I'm wrong. I also heard that he was pressured by someone, or was asked by someone, to basically publicly support Christian Horner and basically stand beside him. And to my knowledge, he still didn't do it or didn't want to do it. So I don't know. I think it's a bit of both. I think he, at the same time, he doesn't really want to go to another team, but at the same time, you know, there's a saying, any PR is good PR. But maybe not in this case when it's involving, you know, essentially a Me Too, you know, 2.0. So I don't know. I think it's a bit of both.
Maybe you're right. Maybe my impression of Max is just that he's like, is like a soulless winning robot that doesn't care about anything else. But maybe that's just me. I don't know.
Well, this brings up another point too, because we were talking about Ford and that inability or whatever the issues are with the you know, the combustion engine that they're trying to go with the sustainable fuels, and they're having trouble with that. Yeah, let's call it the EcoBoost. I love that. Yeah, with the EcoBoost engine, and now Ford is saying that they're not loving the bad PR that Red Bull's getting, and they're thinking about pulling out a sponsorship. Now, is that because they can't develop a good enough engine? So they said, let's just blame it on this, and we'll dip out of the contract. Or is it because they're genuinely worried about what's going on with Christian Horner? Because it seems to have gone away a little bit when they said, hey, you know what? Our internal investigation's been done. We agree that it was done, like, you know, a completely non-biased way. And, you know, all the parties are happy with the resolution or whatever the case may be. Now, I've heard that the person alleging the wrongdoing, they have an ability to appeal the case. So no one still wants to comment on it. But that all being said, you know, then there was this whole leak of a G Drive file getting shared. And I'm like, man, this is juicy. Like, we got to get down and talk about this, because, like, at what point is, like, because if somebody got a little handsy at a Christmas party, I don't know if it would go this far. Like, do you think that there's some, like, real nasty stuff going on? Like, don't you think they would have said something like that? Or is getting handsy at a Christmas party enough to justify all of this chatter about it in this new world we live in?
I don't know. It's hard to say. It could be both. I wouldn't want to believe it just because someone got a little bit touchy. It blows up this big the way it is right now. But at the same time, I would not be surprised by today's world and, you know, the last 5 years, especially how the world has changed. Not surprising at all. It's weird the way everything is going time-wise, just to, you know, what you said, investigation complete, everything's happy, no wrongdoing, 24 hours later, bam, you know, the G drive drops and all this proof, you know, from, I think, WhatsApp messages, and then all of a sudden, no comment, I stand by, you know, I didn't do anything wrong, and it's just, it seems something's up. We don't have the full story yet. I'm not sure if we're going to get the full story, but something is definitely up. And to kind of backtrack a little bit as well, not sure if you guys knew, but when the whole allegations came out with Christian Horner at Red Bull, essentially Red Bull were ready to fire him on the spot. He got wind of that, and he essentially threatened with his lawyers, blocked that dismissal. So that's why he's still part of the team. So I find that interesting too. So there's a lot of shit we don't know.
I did notice too, now that you mentioned that, after watching the first race, there wasn't a whole lot of Christian Horner. Like, usually he's like a star in that, you know what I mean? And like, I didn't see a lot of Christian Horner. There was a lot of Toto Wolff on the screen. Didn't see a lot of Christian Horner. Didn't really put that together until right now.
Maybe. Well, I think from what I saw, you know, excerpts of these leaked text messages, I think the insinuation was that it's not a one-time holiday party kind of thing, right? This is kind of like an ongoing, with harassment, you know, relationship, whatever you want to call it. And Thomas, you kind of alluded to this, you know, all the other politics that are happening behind the scenes, right? I'm sure we've seen some of the similar reports that Red Bull Austria wants to get Horner out, and then there's a Thai Red Bull conglomerate that's trying to keep him in. And apparently I read this other article where Horner was trying to gather funding. Did you guys see this? Yeah. He was trying to raise money to partner with the Thai Red Bull group to buy out Austrian Red Bull. Yeah. So there's a lot of politics at play here. You know, who knows? It'd be really interesting to, you know who leaked that. You know, where from inside did that come, and what were their motivations, right? Because there's so much else going on here.
Like, obviously, like,
I mean, at the end of the day, like, you know, Christian probably sent some shitty messages to somebody that he probably shouldn't have.
Yeah.
You know, considering that, A, they work for him, B, he's married. Like, not a good look, Christian.
Is it surprising, though? Kind of not. You know, like, I'm not... Like, you know,
I don't know, man. I don't know. Once you have a Spice Girl wife and you do that shit, that's I don't know. Like,
yeah, but you, okay. So we've all seen videos and pictures of Christian like 10, 12, 15 years ago. Like, that man was punching way above.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah,
way above his belt, like with Jerry and like the Spice Girl thing, and like the whole Formula One, like, made him a superstar and like gave him a lot of extra credit. Then he got some plugs in, he got some new teeth, and now all of a sudden he's like on top of the world, right? 2-time world champion, 3-time world champion, and now he's like, fucking, I can do whatever I want.
Until you can't.
Until you can't. Until you fucking can't. Write it down and shit gets leaked.
Yeah. Fuck. What did you learn? Whatever. So be it. It is what it is. But I think the overarching, you know, I guess my biggest complaint, and, you know, Thomas and I touched on this a little earlier too, is that, like, the best part about F1 right now has nothing to do with the racing. And that's the sad part. Cause, like, we can get behind it because we can look past it. We love the sport over and above the week to week races. But the reality is that some of these new fans are not going to get down with this. They don't care about this. They want to watch a race on Sunday. They want to see something wildly entertaining. And then they're going to turn it on the next race a week or two later, where we can get behind all this stuff. We got something to talk about. All that's good. But, like, yeah, I don't know. It is.
That's
fun.
Why we're here. We're bringing the entertainment to the masses, right? To to placate them in between boring ass races.
That's it.
Let's get back to the racing for a second. Should we do predictions?
Do we need to?
Yes.
Like, I would love to. Yes, I would.
Come
I would
on.
Love to.
Of course.
Let's just pick third place.
No. Let's do. I don't have that much. You have that much faith in Sergio?
No, I don't actually. Even after that race, like, there was so many times there that, like, all it took was another odd lockup from Leclerc and they both would have been out. So yeah, no. It's
so we're going back to 2-4. Are we carrying on the 2-4 that we did last?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's tradition.
I guess, you know, we should just continue it until they give us a reason not to.
My guy, you nailed it.
Until someone else wins, we're just going to automatically assume that Max wins.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Those are the new rules for the Parc Fermé predictions. All right, take a shot in the dark, Thomas. Who do you got?
Second, I'm gonna go with Checo. Third, I'm gonna go with Sainz. Fourth, Charles.
Okay, I'm gonna go with Sainz, Checo, George.
Okay. I am going to go with Ricardo, Joe, and Stroll, because why the fuck not at this point? Like, who cares?
We're picking from the front, right? Or from the back?
We're picking from the front.
Okay. Just wanted to clarify. That's all.
Okay. Right. No, I'll go again. I'll go again. Sorry.
Let's get us room.
Give me a real one. You know what? I'm going to go with Leclerc, Russell, Alonso.
Okay.
I'm not going to be so
Hamilton
cynical.
Hasn't been getting the love. And I'm a Hamilton fanboy through and through.
I gave him love last week.
Yeah, it's true. I'm disappointed.
He disappointed. Yeah. You know what? Hopefully, whatever. Car was overheating. His seat broke, apparently.
Mm.
You know, like a bolt, like someone forgot to screw it in. I'm not really sure how that happens.
You know what? So, you know where seats don't break? Ferrari.
Yeah, but everything else breaks.
It's true.
The seat
I haven't
is
heard
fine.
Of a broken seat, though.
No.
I haven't heard of a broken
but
seat.
But the brakes don't work.
That's all right.
Like, they can't
you
get
don't
the
need
pit
to
stop right.
What do you need to stop for? It goes so fast, you don't need to stop.
Just typical Ferrari problems, brakes not working, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
But hey, let's give credit where credit's due. Pit stops on point. And... yeah, they didn't have any sort of issues in terms of, like, plan C, plan F. That's a step in the right direction. You know what I mean?
Operationally, they were okay.
Yeah, it would look good. And, you know, let's get real. Before we wrap up, I just, like, the Carlos and the Leclerc fight this year is going to be fire.
Yeah. Because
Sainz doesn't give a fuck.
No, he's got nothing to lose right now.
He's
just
got to
fucking perform.
The only thing he has is another seat to win, and he's going to go for it. And I love it.
Yep.
I'm here for it.
No, that'll be fun. That'll be a fun little battle.
There is going to be fun on the grid. It's just, it's not going to be about winning this year. There's going to be lots of, like, little fun battles, like, around the track, but it has nothing to do with who's winning and losing, unfortunately.
No, It's all gonna be like little interpersonal spats. Anyways.
Yeah.
I can think of no better way to close out our first official episode of this racing calendar than by reintroducing our favorite game. Oh, name that sponsor.
Hey, my guy, coming back with a big W. Okay.
For those of you who are new here, the game is really simple. I name a sponsor. Drew and Thomas have to guess which car it's on and what that company does. Very simple rules. Harder than you'd think.
We make it harder than it needs to be, that for sure.
First up, and the fun part is we have brand new liveries, brand new sponsors this year. So, like, it's a fucking
brand new logistics companies.
Brand new, like, everyone's in logistics.
That's it.
First up is Sense Time. S-E-N-S-E. Time.
I'm going to say it's a watch company or something to do with watches. I'm going to say Steak Sauber.
Okay.
I'm going to go with Haas, and I'm going to go with it has something to do with technology in terms of like database management, stuff like that.
Okay. Thomas, you're half points. So it's on Steak Sauber and SenseTime, for all of you wondering, is a leading AI software company providing AI technologies across industry verticals. Smart business, smart city, smart life, and smart auto. There you go.
Damn. You no half it. Points. I didn't get half points for the... No, we don't do half
points. No, this season, okay. we're doing half points. This season, let's do half points.
Okay. No, you know, all or none. No, you're right. Let's make it a challenge. Yeah. All or none.
Yeah, it's a challenge.
I did complete, like, tangent, but I do love how whenever, like, the commentators were referring to this team, the Steak team, they just called them Sauber.
Sauber, yeah.
Because it feels like a throwback. And I love that. And Steak is getting no love.
I know. And you know they paid a fortune for that.
Yeah.
And they're getting
just fucking Sauber.
I would argue it's the same thing with the RB Visa Cash App. I didn't hear Visa, RB, or I didn't hear Visa or Cash App once during the race.
No, I think they called the RB formerly AlphaTauri, formerly Minardi. I think that's kind of like, formerly, what was it before that? AlphaTauri, what was it before that? Anyways, doesn't matter.
Oh, Toro Rosso.
Toro Rosso, thank you. Yeah. And then formerly Minardi. That was kind of how they referred to that team. So that was also fun. I think they should just call them Minardi and Sauber. I think that would be great. Next up, Binance.
Oh, ding, ding, ding. Mm-hmm. Binance. They are on McLaren, and they are a Bitcoin wallet, kind of like Bitcoin trading platform.
Thomas?
I was actually going to say the same thing. McLaren and something with the trading platform, something with money or finance.
Well, since there are no half points, you guys are both wrong. It is a crypto exchange.
Yeah, it is a crypto exchange. I knew that.
And it is on Alpine.
Ha. Ha.
There you go. Ha. Last one. Hugo,
ding, ding, ding.
Ooh.
Hugo Boss is on Aston Martin, and they are absolutely, I would say that either men's clothing, but it's a fashion line.
Thomas?
Hugo, I'm going to say perfume, and to not copy Drew, I'm going to say Mercedes.
So this was a bit of a trick question. You're both wrong, by the way.
Oh, I love it.
So the team I named, or the sponsor I named, was Hugo, not Hugo Boss.
Oh, that's confusing. You sneaky snake.
Which I think is like an offshoot of Hugo Boss. It's like maybe a sub-brand.
Mm.
But I did say Hugo, so pay attention next time. Mm. And it is on the Visa RB Cash App fucking running bulls. It's an AlphaTauri.
Racing bull.
AlphaTauri. All right. So,
0 for 3. That's a great
0 for 3.
It. Yeah. Yeah. We love it.
Kind of just feels like home.
That's it.
All right. So we will be back next week recapping the Saudi Arabia Grand Prix. Boys, has been lots of fun. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to rate, subscribe, tell your friends, join the Discord, all the good things. Everything you need is in the show notes. And we'll talk to you next time.